Good morning, welcome everybody.
Good morning.
See so many people back and some new faces as well. Chodesh as well, Chodesh Tov. Very, very exciting. Chodesh of Matan Torah. So, historically it's been a little bit rough in the summer, but also some beautiful things happened in this month. So we're going to be spending a Shavuos with Rachel and Leah. And you notice, I believe all the sources are just simple, straightforward psukim and Rashi. So I mean, it's very straightforward sources today, but hopefully it'll be a little bit of a different perspective. So I imagine many people here are familiar with the basic ideas or storyline that we're going to speak about, but hopefully it'll be a little bit of a new perspective, which will shed some light on the end of Shavuos. So we're going to start off. I brought three very short sources over here, just to start where we see Shavuos in the Torah. And there's a little bit of a discrepancy between how the Torah describes Shavuos and how it's observed today. Now, a disclaimer, and this is especially for Yoni, we're not getting into the full history of what changed and when and why and how. I'm not going to get into that today so much, but just some of the basics to just see what I'm talking about. So first of all, let me start with the question. What is Shavuos about? How do we celebrate, observe Shavuos? What's the theme of Shavuos?
I think
okay, so I got a bunch of different answers, and most of them are biblically based. The one I was asking for was I think somebody did say it is Matan Torah. That is for sure how we celebrate, right? You read the Shmoneh Esrei, the words that we say it's not right, Matan Matan Torah Seinu. Chag Shavuos Zman Matan Torah Seinu Mikra Kodesh Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's Zman Matan Torah Seinu. And the way we particularly observe it, you think of any of the practices that we have nowadays for Shavuos, for example,
staying up
all night or as much as possible, right? Go to the drop, so that's in the theme of Matan Torah. What do we do to our shuls? What?
Dairy.
Eating dairy also. Well, many reasons for dairy, but that as well.
Decorating,
particularly to reflect the simcha and the celebration, and maybe the grass and flowers of Har Sinai. Right. So we're really trying to connect to Matan Torah on Shavuos. However, as several people already noted, that if you look at the what the Torah says about Shavuos, that's not the main point at all. In just the simple read of the psukim. Now we're going to take a look at three sources. I didn't quote all the sources because again, this is not if this was the Shavuos a Tikkun Leil Shavuos shiur, that would be much longer. Then I might go through all the passages in the Torah about Shavuos, and then we might go even through the history. And at which point do we start to see more of the Matan Torah theme show up? And what's the background behind that? I don't want to do that. So much. We'll just take a look at some of these sources. The first source is from Parshas Mishpatim. I believe this is the first mention of Shavuos in the Torah. It says, "V'chag ha-katzir bikurei ma'asecha asher tizra basadeh." The Chag ha-katzir, right? So it's the harvest festival. Bikurei ma'asecha, right? The bikurim, the first fruits. That this is the opening day for bikurim. We know that there is a special mitzvah to bring the first of event of the Shiva Saminim, the seven special, we'll call them fruits, even though, I mean, grain, as much as grain can be a fruit. The seven fruits, the seven species of Israel, and the first of them are brought to the Beis HaMikdash. These are Bikurim, and that opening day is Shavuos, so it's Bikurim Asecha. And then in the next few parshas later, also in Sefer Shemos, in Parshas Kisisa, V'chag Shavuos ta'aseh lecha, you should make the holiday of Shavuos, of weeks, Bikurei Kitzir Chitim, the first of the wheat harvest. And then there's another mention of Shavuos in Sefer Vayikra, that's in Parshas Emor, we saw it very recently, which doesn't speak about Bikurim as much, it speaks more on the topic of of just being the end of Sefirot HaOmer. That's the context over there. And then Parshas Bamidbar. Sefer Bamidbar. Parshas Pinchas. This is the laning for Maftir of Shavuos both days. And this is in the series of all those. Chris, anybody who has a Bar Mitzvah Parsha of Parshas Pinchas can lane a lot, for a lot of Yom Tovim, lane the Maftir. So in that series of all the holidays, it brings down Shavuos, and it just starts off. This is just the first pasuk. Uvayom haBikurim. It gives us a new day to this to the holiday, new name to the holiday. On the day of Bikurim, v'hakrivchem mincha chadasha laHashem. You bring this new offering to Hashem, this new karam mincha b'shavuos seichem in your weeks. Okay, mikra kodesh yelachem kol mechas avodah lo sasu. It mentions it again in Parshas Re'eh. Parshas Re'eh and Sefer Devarim mentions Shavuos. That's more in the context of the Shalosh Regalim and Aliyah L'Regel. That is also a passage about the Yom Tovim, but it doesn't mention Rosh Hashanah, doesn't mention Yom Kippur. It's focusing on really the three pilgrimage festivals. Okay, the main point I wanted to show over here again, not going through every single passage and trying to understand what was the Torah's intention over here in Sefer Shemos when it speaks about Shavuos, and over here in Vayikra when it speaks about Shavuos, and Bamidbar and Dvarim. I'm not doing that. Just to point out the discrepancy between how we particularly observe it nowadays and what the Torah describes it as. The Torah describes it primarily as an agricultural holiday. Again, not talking about the connection to Sefirot HaOmer right now, but focusing just on Bikurim, and there's a harvest, and then of course nowadays we have Matan Torah. Now again, I'm not questioning or denying the calculation that Chazal tell us, nor the tradition that we have that Matan Torah indeed took place on Shavuos, on the holiday Yom Bikurim, Shavuos, etc. Nor am I challenging the fact that it's appropriate to celebrate Matan Torah there. But what is it about Matan Torah that is it just like a random thing that happened to be on the same day as Yom HaBikurim, as Chag HaKatzir? And since Chag HaKatzir and Yom HaBikurim are not so relevant to us nowadays, we've had a base of Mikdash, so now we say, okay, you know what, there was something else that happened then too. Is that it? Or is there something more fundamental about the description in the Torah and Matan Torah that we can understand? And I would like to, I would assume the latter, but I want to take a look at that through the prism of a certain story that is plays out through several parshios in Sefer Bereishis. And it is well known. It's the basics of the story. We know if you went to yeshiva day school, you've learned it when you were younger. But we're going to try to take a little bit of a new perspective, seeing the whole thing in context, and hopefully it'll have some very, very important lessons for our life, as well as enlighten Shavuos a little bit more. So we're going to start this second part by the fourth source over here. It's Bereishis, Chavtes, Lamed Beis, Lamed Dalet. Right, so this is in Parshas Vayetze. We know that Yaakov marries, right? So Yaakov runs away from home, right? Running away and running to, right? He's running from, what's he running from? Esau wants to kill him. What's he running to? Right, Shaduchim. He needs, right? He's also part of his intention is to get married. And so he meets the girl of his dreams, we call her that. He meets Rachel, and he instantly he realizes that this is the one for him. So he asks the father for the marriage, and of course offers what anybody would offer: 7 years of free labor for her. And the father is very willing. Lovin agrees, and then of course what Lovin does on the night of the wedding is switcheroo. Switcheroo switches Rachel for Leah, and Yaakov marries Leah. And Yaakov is a little bit disappointed the next morning. And so Laban says, we'll make it all better. Just work 7 more years. I'll give you Rachel. You work 7 more years and you have Rachel too. Okay. So now Yaakov is married to two wives. And we'll leave off Bill and Zilpah for now. Yaakov is married to two wives, Rachel and Leah. And As we go through the story, so we notice that it's almost like the gift of the Magi, Lahavdil, that what one has the other wants and what other the other wants the other one has, right? What's the thing that Rachel wants more than anything in the world?
Children.
And she doesn't have it. Who does have children? Leah. And now what does Leah want? What do they think? She wants the full undivided love and attention of Yaakov, and she doesn't quite have it. But who does? Rachel. So there's a little bit of that irony in the story. So let's look at just some of the psukim that indicate this. Actually, you know, not just that indicate this, but these desires, the desire for Yaakov and the desire for children, is actually played out. You see that it's, you know, we're going to see it's a theme. It's played out in the names that they give their children. So take a look at the source. Vatahar Leah vateled bein. Leah conceived and she gave birth to a son. Vatikra shemo Reuven. She calls the son Reuven. Ki amro ra Hashem bani ki ata yavani ishi. She said, now because Hashem has seen my affliction, and now my husband's going to love me. So we see that she names her son based on this desire to be loved by Yaakov, or loved more. It's a discussion of what it means. The pasuk says she's snua. Ramban has two opinions, it's literal or just her perspective. Vatahar od vateled bein. She gave another son. Vatomer, and she said, ki shama Hashem ki snua anochi. He saw that I'm hated. Hashem saw I'm hated. Vayiten li gam es zeh. V'tikra shero Shimon. So again, also the next child is named for her relationship with Yaakov. And then Vatahar od vateled bein. She has another son. Vatomer ata hapam yilaveh yishi elai. This time, my husband will be melave me. He will, right, just said last night, melave malka, to escort. Right? Halavaya is where someone, right, we escort someone for the final time. Melave, so that's why, and as we just counted in last week's parsha, right? Kilati lo shoshavanim, alkein karashimo Levi. So she calls him Levi. Because now my husband's going to be connected to me. He's going to walk with me. He's going to escort me. I think it was the Chizkuni. I'm not sure if it's Chizkuni who gave a shot. What is it about the third son? Now he's going to escort me. So Chazal famously say that they had a premonition, you know, Ruach HaKodesh, some indication that they were going to have four wives, 12 children overall. So she had three children at this point. So she said, I've done my part. I've done my share. But I think it's Chizkuni who says that when you have, right, so if a mother has a child, so she can hold the child's hand. If a mother has a second child, so she can hold the two child's hand. Once a mother has a third child, she needs a little bit of support from her husband, right? So now Yaakov's going to have to walk with me because he's going to hold the child of my third hand. So now finally, hapam yilave yishi elai. Now he's going to have to walk with me because he knows they didn't have the backpacks, I guess, right? He knows I can't take all three of them by myself, so he has to walk with me. But Rashi says, more famously, quoting Chazal, that having three was good. But we see that they're named for her desire to be close to Yaakov. And in fact, even the fourth son, Yehuda, Chazal say that Yehuda is a pamod es Hashem. I'm going to thank Hashem. Why is she, like, now I'm thanking Hashem. What's this new thanks coming from? Right? Because I had more than my share. So again, about this share, about the portion of Yaakov. So that's what we see is in Leah. And in her mind, as she expresses in like the deepest way to express it, in naming her children. Look at the next source. Vatikra Shemo, this is Rachel giving birth to her first son, finally, after many years. Vatikra Shemo Yosef, Lemor Yosef Hashem Li Ben Acher. Even when she finally, after many years, has a child, and she's waiting, and she's watching her sister have child after child after child after child. She is watching her maidservant and her sister's maidservant, child after child, then back to Leah, child after child again, and child after child. And she, finally she has a son. What does she name him? Yosef. Why? Because Yosef Hashem li ben acher. Hashem, can I have another? Please, sir, can I have another? I would like to have another child. So we see that this was really her deep desire. Now, we'll do this Rashi over here, also part of the theme. There's a really beautiful point, I think, if you look in Chazal. Well, actually, you know, there's also a very tragic point about Rachel and Leah and these desires. Maybe we'll skip to a source and we'll go back. So if you go on the second page. Yeah, thank you. So the pasuk says this is on the second page, second source. We'll go back in a moment. Bereishis lamed hei tesein chaf aleph. So it says, "Vayisu mi beis el vayihi od kivrasa aretz levo efrasa vateled Rachel vatakash belidta." This is Rachel having her second son, Binyamin. Vayihi b'hashkosa belidta vatomer lahamiledes al tiri ki gam ze lach bein. Says, "Don't worry." The thing that she told her to comfort her is, "Don't worry, you're having another child. You're having a son." Vayihi b'tseis nafsha ki meisa vatikra shmo benoni leviv kara lo Binyamin. And so she named her son. The son of my suffering, Ben Oni, and Vatamas Rachel, Vatikaver Bederach Efrasahi Beis Lachem, and she is buried in Beis Lachem. So what's so tragic about this is that her whole life, what does she want?
Children.
And when she only has one child, and when she's having her second child, she passes away and doesn't even get to enjoy. And the same thing, or the reverse, I guess, you'll see with Leah. Right? Look in the next psukim over here. Vayetze Yaakov Vayatsev Yaakov Matseva al Kvurasa, he Matsevas Kvuras Rachel Ahayom. This is the cave of Rachel until today, says the Torah. Vayisa Yisrael Vayeta Halo Mehalo Migdal Eder. And then Yaakov traveled on and he placed his tent further. And of course, What happens right after that? That pasuk alludes to it. Yaakov moves his tent, and right after we see the scene of Reuven and Bilhah. Right, what's so tragic about that scene in the context of our discussion of with Reuven and Bilhah? Aside from obviously, you know. Exactly. How ironic and unfortunate, right? So fine, like when we think Rachel and Leah are gonna get what they've wanted, and finally, oh, Rachel has a son, and she has another son, and she passes away, and Leah finally, okay, you know, she doesn't want her sister to die, but you know, her sister passes away, so finally Leah's gonna get the attention, and as Chazal, you know, described, Yaakov did not make his primary residence with Leah, but rather with Bilhah. That's why Reuven stepped up and moved the tents. So you see, it's not just, you know, when I learned this when I was younger, I was thinking, okay, it's just you know, this is how the story went. But you notice there's a very, very clear theme playing throughout, and that just it slips through their hands just as they try to get it. I want to point out a very beautiful point, and now I want to go back to the previous page. I'm sorry for doing it in this order, but a very, very beautiful point. Also, it's subtle, and you have to pay attention to the words of Chazal to pick up on it. But also in this very same theme of children and wanting the affection of Yaakov, we see Chesed that both Rachel and Leah did. Anybody think about it? Actually, Chesed that Rachel did for Leah, or Leah did for Rachel in this theme.
Let's say that Rachel gave Leah the codes on the night of the wedding.
Okay. Okay, very good. So now with the bottom source on the first page, quoting Rashi, quoting Gemara Megillah, Vayihi b'boker hine hileya, right? So it says when he woke in the morning, and behold, it's Leah. Like he Yaakov just realized then. Ava balayla lo hayasa Leah, but it wasn't Leah at night. In the morning, behold, it was Leah, but it wasn't Leah that night. And Yaakov didn't think it was Leah. Why? Lefisha mosar Yaakov simanim leRachel, because Yaakov gave over certain signs to Rachel. Uchasharasa Rachel shemachnisim lo Leah. Right? Yaakov gave signs. He gave a secret code to Leah. Sorry, to Rachel, and he said, I know your father's a trickster. She's actually told him that your father's a trickster. So let's make up a secret code, whatever it was, secret code, and you're going to be able to tell me this, and I'll know that it's you on the night of the wedding. And when Rachel realized that Leah was being brought in, she saw Leah in her shame. Rachel said, I can't let Leah suffer in such a way. And she gave over these simanim, these signs. And Amran, she said, "Achsha tikalemo chasi, my sister's going to be humiliated." Omda masar lo also simanim. She gave over the signs. So Rachel realized the shame, but she actually gave over the husband, Yaakov, she gave over to Leah. And it didn't really work so much yet, but she had at least tried. And if you look at the very next source, top source on the first, on the second page, Dina, right? It goes to the naming of Dina. It's very interesting, Dina's appearance, right? Chazal tells us that there actually, well, there's at least one opinion in Chazal that tells us there are many more daughters of Yaakov, right? Another 13 daughters of Yaakov. But the Torah tells us, right, it's just son after son after son after son after son. Clearly there's something big going on here, tribal leaders, patriarchs, okay, good. And then, out of nowhere, there's a daughter born. No, as a Dina is born to Leah. So what's going on here? So Rashi says, what's the name Dina? That also doesn't explain the name. So Perishu Rabbeinu, Gemara Bracha says, Shadona Leah Din Ba'atzma. That Leah judged, she made a calculation, a din, a judgment in herself. Imze Zachar, if this is going to be a boy, if I'm going to have a boy right now, Lo Tehe Rachel Achosi Ka'achas HaShvachos. So Rachel is not going to have even as many as sons as the mid as the not the midwives, the concubines, the maidservants, the shvachos, right? Because again, we back to that calculation earlier. This Rashi is in the same line of thought as the whole calculation that there are going to be 12 sons that are going to be 12 tribal leaders born at this point, and we have. Yeah, we have four wives, so everyone's going to have three. And Leah is realizing, I already have six. And Bilhah has two, and Zilpah has two. So we're at 10. And now I'm pregnant. So if I have number 11, there's only going to be one possible child left. That means even if Rachel has that child, she has less than Bilhah, less than Zilpah. I can't let her have that shame. So what did she do? So she davened over it and originally it was going to develop to be a boy and then turned to be a girl. The Gemara Brachos over here discusses this and can someone daven for the gender of a child? And this is, that discussion takes us, you know, starts off in, or well, at least one of the sources is in this Gemara and Brachos. But the point is that what was this tefillah that Leah had for Rachel, for her to have something with children. So you see that is not, both these stories are not mentioned explicitly in the Psukim, but Chazal see, looking very, very carefully, that there was a, like almost like a secret chesed, right? Many understand that the Rachel giving over the simanim was secretive, that she didn't reveal that she was really supposed to be one married. There's an interesting discussion about that with Chaim Levitz, and Sichas Musar brings it down. I think this is a source in Chazal as well that it's based on. So there's like some secret chesed that Rachel does for Leah having to do with her being with Yaakov. And there's a secret chesed that Leah does for Rachel having to do with Rachel having children. So are we starting to buy into the fact that there's a theme here, right? There's something going on. So we did these this next source. So now I want to go to one scene where it really becomes very clear. When do Rachel and Leah make it very, very clear that this is what they care about? What? So that's exactly what I think it is. If you take a look at the third source, Bereishis Lamed Yudal Tazayin. Vayelech Ruvein b'mei Ketzir Chitim vayimtza Dudayim basadeh. Reuven goes out and he picks up these dudaim, certain type of plant, right? Rashi and Ramban say it's mandrakes or jasmine or some sort of plant. And he brings them to Leah, his mother. So right, just had Mother's Day. Reuven basically takes some flowers. Here, Ma, happy Mother's Day. And Vatomer Rachel says, Eleya, tinina li midudai b'neich. Give me from the dudayim of your son. Can I have some of those flowers? Vatomer la, and she, Leah responds to her, Hamad kachteches ishi. Is it not enough that you took my husband? Right? I was married to him. We were happily married for an entire week, and then all of a sudden you marry him. Right? V'lekachas gam es dudei b'ni. And now it's not enough that you want my husband, but you want my flowers too? That's right. With my husband, that's not a big deal. Now you're crossing the line. And now you want my flowers. That's Vatoma Rachel, and Rachel says, L'chein yishkavim halayla tachas dudei b'nech. Okay, so you know what? You can have Yaakov for the night. Really, it's my night to be with Yaakov. You can have it for the night instead of the Judayim. Vayavo Yaakov min hasadeh. Yaakov comes from the sadeh, from the field. Ba'erev in the evening. Vateitzei Leah the kraso. Leah goes to greet him. Vatomer Eli tavo. She says, "Come to me tonight." Kisachor sachartiha. I rented you, right? I hired you. I paid for you. B'dudai b'ni, and I paid good money. I paid like hefker flowers for my son. Vayishkavi mah balayla hu. And she slept and he slept with her that night. Okay, so one thing we have to figure out is, okay, we understand why Leah wants what she wants. Why does Rachel want the Dudayim? That's a question. What does Rachel want from the Dudayim?
Potion.
Okay, so what does it do?
Pregnancy.
Okay, right. So one kind of idea we see expressed differently in various mafarshim, but that it might have been something that helped with. It might have been a type of plant that helped with fertility. I believe Ibn Ezra says. I think Ibn Ezra says actually that it looked like a man. Could be that's mandrakes. I don't know. It looked a little bit like a human being form, and it helped with fertility. If you notice, the word Dudayim has the word Adam in it, rearranged, something like that, whatever. So it could be that it helped with fertility. Some say that it didn't help with fertility, but it helped. It could be some sort of perfume or something that would have made her more appealing, more attractive which might have helped Yaakov when he was with her in order to help her, again, somehow increase fertility. My Rebbe had suggested, my Rebbe, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, son of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, he suggested that it's almost in the theme of like what we said with the Mother's Day. It's that she didn't have children bringing home flowers. You know, these like, you know, crushed little dandelions or whatever, and the kid comes home, and there's just something very beautiful about that. The kid comes and says, "I want to give you something, mommy. I love you," and she didn't have that. She wanted a connection to the children because she didn't have any. So my Rebbe suggested that as a possibility. I forgot if he was quoting his father of Aaron or not. But either way, whichever one of these approaches you take, what's the theme? What's it based on? Again, children. Rachel says, "I really, really want children. And I'm even, it sounds almost paradoxical, I'm even willing to sacrifice my relationship with Yaakov for children," even though obviously she can't have the children without Yaakov, right? It takes two to tango. But she says, more than this than being with Yaakov, I want children. And Leah says, "I'm willing to forgo this something for children, connection to children. At this rate, I'm willing to give that up to be with Yaakov." And so that's like a big moment over here where they're indicating what their priorities are. Now, if you think about, we spoke about the tragedy of that when they finally seem to have what was coming to them, it slips through their fingers. Rachel was so close to having children. She had a child. So close to having children, and then she couldn't really have it. And Leah was so close to finally having Yaakov, and then also she didn't have it. So how could this be? Where's the justice almost? So if we think about it a little bit more, like I think the last, or maybe the last part in this saga is where they are buried. If you go to skip one source. Bereishis Memches Zayin. Rachel is buried. Vani Bavoi. So this is Yaakov in Vayechi explaining to Yosef why he didn't bury Rachel where he is asking to be buried in the Maros Machpelah. Vani Bavoi Babadan Aram Mesa Lai Rachel Beretz Kanan Baderech Ba'od Kivras Eretz Lovo Efras Avak Barash Shem Baderech Efras Hi Beis Lechem. I buried her on the way in Beis Lechem. If you look two sources down, over here, this is him saying about, this is later on in Parshas Vayechi. Shama, he says, Kavru es Avram ve'sara yishto. Shama kavru es Yitzchak ve'es Rivka yishto. The first two avos and the first two imahos are buried there. Vishama kavarti es Leah, and there I buried Leah. Yaakov says I buried Leah there, and I want to bury her there too. So where is Leah buried? Right, in Maris Ochil, more specifically with Yaakov, and Rachel is buried somewhere else. But why? Why is she buried somewhere else? So let's take a look at this Rashi, a second to last source. Ekar Hashem v'lo halachtia. So I didn't even bury her in the land proper, and I know, Yosef, that you have tainas against me. I know you're upset a little bit. You're a little bit disturbed that your mother is not, you know, buried in a more honorable place, and especially not the place that I had the chutzpah, says Yaakov, to ask you to bury me. But you should know, I did it al pi hadibur, according to the Ruach HaKodesh. Shetehele Ezra Levaneha Kishayagle Osam Nevuzaradan. It's that it should be for help for her children when Nevuzaradan. Who's Nevuzaradan? The general of Nebuchadnezzar's army talking about destroying the first base of Mikdash. Vayu Ovrim Derech Sham. They're going to pass by there. Yotzeis Rachel Al Kivra. What's Rachel going to do? She's going to get up from her grave, uvocha, and cry, uvakeshes aleim rachamim, and davar for them. Shenemar, as it says so famously, so many beautiful tunes to this. Shenemar, kol birama nishma. A voice, birama, in either in Rama or in the heights, is heard. Vagomer, vakarish bar, right, she's, right, racham avaka abaneha. Rachel's crying over her children. There's schar for your efforts. Neum Hashem, the word of Hashem. Vishavu vanim ligvulam. The children will return her. Vishavu vanim, vishavu vanim. This is from Pasuk in Yirmiyahu. We quote it in the Haftarah on Rosh Hashanah. Vishavu vanim ligvulam. Also, whenever you hear someone's making aliyah, ready to sing it. Okay. Vonglas tirgim. Okay. And that's that. So why did I bring up that Rashi, this comment on Chazal? Because where is Rachel buried? In the way, but why?
To pray
for the children. That's the word I'm looking for. But yes. Pray for the children. So we were wondering, Leah wanted Yaakov her whole life, and then slipped through her fingers. But where is she buried? Eternally? Right next to Yaakov. And Rachel, all her life, wanted children. And then she never had children. She had a child. She never had children. It slipped through her fingers. But where is she buried? In a way that she's always mevaka al baneha, that we call her. We don't really call most of our imahos mama something. Mama Leah, right? They are. It's also Leah Imenu. Rivka Imenu, sorry, Imenu. But there's something special about Rachel Imenu that's Mama Rachel. It's Mama Rachel. Rachel Imenu. There's something very, very unique in her connection and in her motherhood for all of Klal Yisrael. And even if you don't have a specific Mesorah, you don't have a tradition that you come from Rachel, right? Maybe you come from one of the other, but we say she's Rachel, our mother. We connect to Rachel because Rachel does have children. So one beautiful, important Emunah point I want to point out from here, which is not the main topic, but the Emunah point that I want to mention is that, you know, we look in this world and we see, it's not fair. It's not fair. But of course, this world is very limited. You have average lifespan 70, 80 years. I may have asked from Halavai, right? But this is so limited in the grand scheme of things. And if the burial place could be an indication of what their Olam Haba is, it's an indication that they finally got what they always wanted. Over here, they didn't get it, but they worked hard and prioritized, and then ultimately they got it. Right? If you look at the Rashi, I'm so sorry for making this so out of order. I'll rearrange it for the next time I give this year. So the fourth source on the second page, L'chein yishkav imach halayla. So you can. She says, you can lie with him tonight. You can lie with Yaakov tonight. I don't have to, says Rachel. So Sheli ha'isa shchivas laila zu. It was my night. Va'ani nosa lach tachas b'dudai b'neich. I'm giving away for your dudai of your son. And then Chazal say, u'lefi shezilzula b'mishkavat tzadik. But because she was mezalzel, she made light of, she disgraced the line with the tzadik, lo zoch sali kaverimo. She was not zocha. She didn't merit to be buried with him. And maybe Rachel was okay with this. Because Rachel made clear her priorities. So what Rachel and Leah, so the Amuna piece is that, yes, Tzadikim and Tzadikim, it could be they have it tough, but the Olam Haba, that's what they always wanted. They get exactly what they always wanted. People like Rachel, people like Leah always got what they always wanted. But the point that a different lesson, but also related, but also and very, very important, I think more relevant for what we're talking about, is that they demonstrated their priorities. They said they lived their whole lives in what is important to me. What was important to Leah? She wanted to be connected to the tzaddik. She wanted to be the wife of the tzaddik, the ultimate Rebbetzin. That was her thing. And what did Rachel want more than anything in the world? She wanted to be the mother of Klal Yisrael. And that's what they worked hard on and pushed and gave up and other things they valued, like the connection to Yaakov and the connection to the children. And they were willing to sacrifice to some degree for their true priority. Of course, it's all in the context of Avodas Hashem. They're all thinking on a very, very high holy level. And they're able to get, at the end of the day, what they always really wanted. But what tells us is our priorities, that's what we have to focus on. What are we prioritizing in our lives? We go back to this source with Reuven. Vayelech Reuven, when did it take place? Bimei Kitzir Chitim. In the harvest, the wheat harvest. Very interesting. Sounds like a Shavuot story, doesn't it? Reuven is the Bechor. Mr. Bikurim. Right? Bechor and Bikurim, the same word. Right, v'imsa dudaim basadeh. In fact, the word dudaim, it's hard to figure what is dudaim, a type of flower. Rashbam says, based on a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, that's the same lashon, that dudaim might be like a basket, or it might be a basket of dates or something like that, which are actually first fruits. So it could actually have imagery of a bring bikurim, the ktsir chitim. This seems like a Shavuah story. And on the Shavuah story, Rachel and Leah are prioritizing, and they're saying, what is the most important thing to me? What is my priority in life? And they're making it very clear over here. And I think that's what the concept of Bikurim is about in general. Bikurim is, right, you know, it's the first fruits. What is it about the first fruits? So that's an entire season that goes into it. You know, when you go into a restaurant and it has on the wall, very often, the first dollar they made. What's the first dollar? And you could, if you would offer them $20, $50 for that, they probably wouldn't sell it, right? What's so special about the first? The first, all my effort, how much time it took for me to learn the art of cooking and culinary school and this and that and a rental and finding the place and all the effort that went into it, and then you finally make that first dollar. That's very, very special. And after an entire season of plowing and planting and watering and harvesting, and you finally have your first fruits, and you say, Hashem, these are going to you. The Bikurim are going to you, Hashem, because you are my priority, Milashim prior. It's first. You are my priority in life, Hashem. And I'm everything I'm doing for the working is in the context of my relationship with you, because you are my priority. You are first and foremost in my life. Everything that I do with my wife and with my kids and with my job and with obviously like davening and shul, things like that, but even everything that's not explicitly kodesh, it's all part of my relationship with you. This is all my, you, because you, Hashem, are my priority. Shavuos is a time of Bikurim, Yom Bikurim. It's demonstrating what we do with the first, what we value. And it's also our anniversary. It's Matan Torah. And an anniversary is a time where a couple remembers, because it's so hard between carpools and this and that, it's trying to remember the relationship. And there's often the stress of working and bills and things like that. And it's hard to remember that you know, that you committed to prioritizing another person in your life. And an anniversary is an opportunity to reprioritize, to reclarify, to from the vows, because then what was the vows in the first place? But at least to remind yourself of your commitment, to remind yourselves of what your priority is, that you prioritize another person. That's what Matan Torah is for us. It's where we remind ourselves when we said Nasav and Israel, we committed to making Hashem our priority. Hashem, you are our number one. we were your number one. You said Bechori Yisrael, we're your Bechor. And Hashem, you're our priority. That's what Matan Torah is. That's what Shavuos is. So it's hard to do it when we don't have Bikurim nowadays. It's hard to do it when we don't have the katsir and the shtei halech and the two loaves and the Beis Hamikdash. It's hard to do that. But we can do it another way by focusing on the main point of Shavuos, which is Matan Torah, which is our commitment to Hashem then. And what do? So we spend a lot of time learning Torah. How do you show that something's really important to you? If it's really, really important that you get it done, so sometimes you pull an all-nighter. If this needs to be done, if this is important to me, I'll pull an all-nighter if I need to. And that's what Shavuos is. So not everyone is able to do it. You know, there's only so much we can do. But in learning, but to push yourself to that point that I'm showing that Hashem and Torah is a priority in my life. That's the idea from Rachel and Leah of in these Bimei Kitzir Chitim, the time of the harvest, to show that Hashem is your priority. And this is something that we need to do, and we need to do in shul and when we're learning, but when we go back home and to our families, to show what is important to us. Our families are able to pick up on that, and you say, "I want to, you know, come out on a Sunday morning, especially, and be involved in learning." To show that's a way of demonstrating this is important to me, right? This is important. I value Torah, and even though maybe I didn't grab the breakfast yet, but this is important to me that I want to be here to learn Torah. That's a big statement to yourselves, and a big statement to your families. When you're able to do that, of course, we have the kollel every night. Zero charge. And I see many people, actually many of my very own chavrusas who are here tonight, who are here today, and come out tonight. But when we do that, and we say at the end of a day, long day at work or whatever else, and you say, I'm showing that everything is really for Hashem. These are my bikurim, even if it's at the end of the day. But Sunday is bikurim, right? But even if it's at the end of the day, I'm putting in my effort and showing that this is what's important to me. It says a big statement to again yourselves and to your families and to Klal Yisrael and most importantly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu of what we value. We should be zocha to be able to tap into this aspect of Shavuos, to be able to receive the Torah, recommit to the Torah, nasa v'nishma, and be enlightened with a spiritually uplifting Shavuos and year.